Thanks again for watching Bricks Behind the Ivy. Aaron, what do you have to say?
Hello, welcome to Bricks Behind the Ivy.
Hey, Cub fans, welcome back to another episode of Bricks Behind the Ivy. I am always am Jeff Rogowskis, aka Candy Cubs. With me is my fantastic co-host, Mr. Sean Hot Stove Cubbies. Sean, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. Watched a little bit of Shota Imanaga before we jumped on the pod today, and I gotta say, he looks so filthy. And I'm ready for 2 weeks. In 2 weeks, we're gonna be playing a real game, so I'm ready.
Yeah, I think that timestamps when we're recording this versus when we're releasing this, which is a fun game you guys can play at home. But yeah, I saw a little bit of the game and saw his two strikeouts that Pitching Ninja had shared. And the first thing I noticed wasn't the strikeouts, but his sock and shoe game, A+. Shota Imanaga, If you happen to listen to this, which I would assume you are because it's the greatest Cubs podcast in the whole world, you have excellent shoe and sock game. But today, if you are watching on YouTube with us, you probably notice that there is a third screen. We have a special guest today to talk about the Milwaukee Brewers, the third in our NL Central preview series. Today, we have Jake McKibben, who is live from Belfast, which is really cool, a Brewers fan from overseas. He is a writer over at Brewers Fanatic, which is the sister site to Northside Baseball, where Sean and myself are contributing writers as well. He was born and raised in Belfast, big rugby and tennis fan, and he came to the United States in 2019 and caught a Brewers game with some cousins, and that was it. That's how he got hooked on the Brewers. I came back overseas and got an LB.TV subscription, as you would, and stays up into the early morning to watch his beloved Brewers. So he started writing for Brewer Fanatic in early 2023 and absolutely loves it. And he had the most read article on Brewer Fanatic of the year in 2023. So that's really cool. Jake, thank you so much for staying late and, you know, working with time zone issues to hop on the pod today. How are you doing?
Not too bad. I appreciate you guys working with me on that front. No, it's great to be here, actually. Really, really been looking forward to it all week. So, baseball.
Absolutely. I think we're obviously everyone here is a huge baseball nerd by default. We started the podcast to talk about baseball. The only thing different about us and you is not just time zone, but the team we root for. So the Milwaukee Brewers, we know obviously Sean and myself are huge Cubs fans and have been kind of looking around the division trying to figure out how this division gets sorted out. It's extremely tight. I don't think any team really did a ton to really differentiate themselves. Each team has unique weakness, I think, that may prevent them from winning the division, and each team has unique strength that is going to be the reason they win the division. So the Brewers offseason, what are your thoughts? What are some of the key free agent acquisitions? If you can give us some notes there.
So I think throughout most of maybe December, most of the Brewer fandom was sitting there waiting for Willy Adames, Corbin Burnes being traded, Brandon Woodruff going down sort of at the end of the season for being out from probably the whole of this year as well. Probably put a bit of a spanner in the works in regards to the idea that you could trade one of them and keep the other and still have a good rotation. Obviously, that didn't happen. Things were really quite quiet. There were a few minor trades of guys lower down the prospect sort of rankings, but still ranked. So we've managed to acquire Jake Bowers from New York, who had a good finish this season, and Brian Hudson, who had 14 strikeouts per nine in the Dodgers minor league system, but nothing particularly big. And then in January, Rhys Hoskins. So sitting there thinking, right, all in. I remember writing an article being like, yeah, this is the Brewers. We're all in this year. Send Corbin off on a high. This is going to be great. And then 10 days later, crap. Bye-bye, Corbin. Got a solid hole for him. A couple of high-ceiling potential guys. Both could flop. Well, Joey Ortiz has a great defensive floor, but he hits the ball hard, but quite a lot on the ground at the moment. he chases probably a little bit too much. But in general, you know, hits the ball. I think he had a 92 mile an hour average exit velocity. So, you know, hits the ball well. DL Hall is some of the nastiest stuff you'll see. It's just, can he put it together over six innings? Can his velocity hold up? And can he stay healthy? So, exciting prospects, but you kind of have to wait for the season to start to sort of get into that. But yeah, that was probably most of our off-season. And of course, the extension for Jackson Chourio, which was incredibly exciting that you might lock up a talent like that for potentially 10 years. So yeah, that was most of the Brewers off-season. I think a lot of it was spent, you know, I'm sure like yourselves in such a tight division, you're kind of watching what all the other teams are doing. St. Louis came out hard early on, and now it kind of looks like haven't really done all that much. The Cubs started strong in stealing our manager, and which was pandemonium. But after that, it died down. Obviously, you know, Belly and Shota are big signings for yourselves. But it kind of felt like just watching around the division, you know, even the Pirates talent, it was just, you know, you're kind of watching around waiting for someone to make that big move, like Monty or a Snell, where you'd be like, okay, these are the guys. And no one really made that move.
Yeah, I think so, that's something. Sean. I think it's something that Sean and I have talked about at length is, those guys, even as we record now, just in case something changes, are still out there, and that move still exists for one of the teams in this division, and it's just not happening. And
no,
you know, I think maybe we're biased as Cubs fans. You look at us as a team that should not have any financial constraints. You would look to us to be the team to do that move, and we're not. And I don't know if it's a Boris issue, if it's a length of contract issue. Now that we're at this point in the spring, is it a ramp up issue? Yeah. It's very interesting as we continue to sit and wait out, you know, three Boris clients that I think, you know, could change the outlook of all the teams in this division: JD Martinez, Blake Snell, and Jordan Montgomery. Obviously, there was a change in manager for the Brewers, and there was a coordinated change in manager with the Cubs. I think, you know, as someone who's watched the Brewers as often as I have, and you have probably watched the Brewers more than I have. I've seen them when they play the Cubs. I have wondered, as front office has shifted there, you know, you saw David Stearns leave, and now you see Craig Counsell leave. I felt like the game planning and the positioning and the lineup construction, bullpen management, all those things were just absolutely elite. And it might be a stat that's literally impossible to track, but at the end of the day, I had assumed it was a tandem of David Stearns and Craig Counsell. And then when David Stearns left, the Brewers would get that, you know, that fan graphs projection, no free ads, of, you know, having 77 wins, and then they would win 92. And there was like 3-4 years in a row where that happened. And every Cub game versus the Brewers was the same. They would get dominated for five, six innings by a high K rate starting pitcher. And then they would shorten the game with deploying Williams Hader in 2-3 inning bursts. And that was it. And the rallies that would potentially, the fake rallies that would happen, would, the Cubs would hit the snot out of the ball, and there'd be some traditionally average defender standing in the exact spot where the ball is. Mm-hmm. Like, just absolute elite game planning. So I guess, without rambling on and on, what do you see the difference in the Brewers' strategy this year under their new manager, the old bench coach? And do you think there is something they're losing with Craig Counsell crossing the border?
I mean, I'd say this comes in sort of two parts. So the Brewers, I think Pat Murphy has a very different personality to Counsell. Counsell's very sort of dour, very, like, you'll not really get a ton of emotion out of him. Pat Murphy is kind of hilarious. He's been kind of loving his sort of time in the spotlight so far. And he's absolutely been brilliant. So there's a couple of speeches that people have done, and obviously spring training, etc. You know, you can kind of overplay your hand, or you can, you know, these big speeches maybe don't hit home so much. But it was interesting when you're watching the back of them, or watching sort of the background, every person's eyes are on him. He commands a ton of respect in that clubhouse. But he does come from maybe a more old school background. So it's how he sort of blends that with, in terms of the approach on the field. I think sort of even from, you can almost see in the way that people work even outside of baseball these days, nothing really is done as a one-man thing. So I'd say a lot of it is the team behind. There'll be analysts in the back. You know, Chris Hook is a pitching coach. He's fantastic. And like you said, David Stearns probably had a very good role. Matt Arnold has been brilliant since coming in. I don't actually think he's had a dud trade yet, which is really quite impressive. But, you know, there is that sort of continuity there, even behind council, which I think will lead to probably very similar sort of decisions, very similar data coming through, very similar approach in that way. I think it's a massive step up for the Cubs, though. So I think the Brewers might have lost a little bit, but I think the Cubs have gained. I remember there was a point last year when you looked at it and it's maybe 50, 60 games in and the Cubs Pythagorean like was incredible. You looked at it and you thought, how are these games being lost? Now, part of it was maybe some ups and downs of the bullpen, but it was weird because you tanked someone 10-0 one day and then, you know, lose 2-1 the next. And it just didn't quite gel up. And that's a real strength of Council's. You have to say that over the course of his managerial career, he's been fantastic at managing to grind over the edge, picking the right pitchers, the right units in the right situation to get those benefits. Hobie Milner's probably a great example. A guy with minimal stuff who, under him last year, had a 1.86 ER, something ridiculous over 61 innings, and just deployed in exactly the right situations to make use of him, lefty, righty, etc. There is one thing that he might do that may be very frustrating, and it did frustrate a lot of Bruce. Do you have anyone of the Cubs with reverse platoon splits?
I'm trying to think of.
Yeah. I think no one immediately comes to mind. I feel like the roster is constructed to platoon. There's a lot of more than maybe some of the past Brewers teams. Everyday players like Dansby Swanson, Nico Hoerner are going to play every day. Seiya Suzuki, yes. Ian Happ are going to play every day. Cody Bellinger is going to play every day. Depending on when PCA is ready, that's going to be whether or not it's in center or first base. So currently, Michael Busch at first base might be platooned with Patrick Wisdom, and that's not reverse. And then third base is Christopher Morel's job to lose. So yeah, I would say currently no, there is not
even with pitching.
Even with
relief pitching, I don't think there's anybody who's a right-hander that's tougher on lefties at this point.
Maybe Kwas.
I would say that arm angle for Kwas is something a little scary.
But I think that's going to be like a 7th-8th inning toy for Craig Counsell. I see him as like the Devin Williams in this puzzle piece. Not to bring that up so soon. I'm really sorry. That was not in
it. He's broken, isn't he? No, the only reason I say it is because time and again over the last 3 years, we Brewers fans have had to deal with the fact that Council does not believe in reverse platoon splits, which I think is a widely held belief, but there were certain players, Kesson here was a prime example. I think he had like an 850, 900 OPS against righties and 550 against lefties, and he didn't see a single plate appearance against a right-hander. Anytime he brought him, like, oh, lefty, you'll be good against them, and you could just see him like, no, but we also had an inordinate number of reverse platoon split guys, which is very strange. We kept picking them up, but no, other than that, and sometimes, you know, lineup construction, but then, you know, that doesn't really mean that much in the grand scheme of things, you know, try and get your best hitters as many at bats as possible, from my view. But no, look, he's a good manager, and he'll get the most out of that, especially the bullpen. You'll find that people just get slightly better results. Maybe that's just, you know, 0.1, 0.2 of an ERA, but across the board, it makes a big difference. So I think that's a big upgrade. I don't think the Brewers have technically lost a whole lot because of that team behind. I think if there was rumors that Chris Hook or Pat Murphy, if he hadn't got the Brewers gig, would have followed over to the Cubs. I think if that had happened, that's when you'd have seen like a real big decline in the Brewers staff.
So Jake, speaking of Pat Murphy, he's going to have a lot of new faces with all those trades and acquisitions. I'm counting like 13 or 14. Although, you know, you weren't in the top, you know, echelon of that free agent spending. I think you made a lot of good deals for your Brewers team. So with that said, what do you envision the opening day offensive lineup there? Who do you see kind of making it? Maybe a couple of notes on who you're excited about.
So I would say when it comes to the opening day lineup, I don't think it'll be who gets the most plate appearances throughout the year. I think with a lot of teams now, if you have options, you're far more likely to go down, earn your way up. Someone's going to fall out of form. Injuries are going to happen. And then you get your chance to cement the plates more often. Like one guy we were very excited about up here was Tyler Black. But it looks like he's probably going to be starting in AAA. So look, I think our opening day lineup is going to be facing Jose Quintana, who has been an absolute Brewer killer over the years. I'm sure you remember a few of those. I think the opening lineup would probably be something like Sal Frelick, William Contreras, Christian Yelich, Rhys Hoskins, Willy Adames, and Gary Sanchez. The top six, and then probably Churio, Monasterio, and I left someone out there.
Ortiz
might be in there. I'm trying to think. So I've got second base covered. Have I got second base in there? Yeah. Let's stick Ortiz in there. Probably Ortiz over Turang.
Okay.
Yeah, Turang. So it's interesting. It's one of those things when you mentioned Pat Murphy. He came out this week, and sometimes you have to disregard things that people say in spring training because you're hyping everybody up. He said that Bryce Turang is likely to take a quantum leap forward. Bryce Turang then started talking. He didn't really have a ton of things that he maybe worked on over the offseason or hasn't really shown much in terms of the hard-hit balls. I think one of his first plate appearances this spring, he was trying to bunt, which isn't really a great sign. But, maybe take that with a pinch of salt. But really excited for Ortiz as well with that defensive floor too. So, yeah, I'd probably stick Ortiz in there. And I'd say he's one of the ones really quite excited to see. You know, him, yeah. Churio, Hoskins, that power makes a massive difference, that lineup. But even, you know, when you say that front five, you know, Frelick is great contact skills. And then Contreras, Yelich, Hoskins, Adames, and even Gary Sanchez, they can all, like, get hot and carry an offense, which is something that's really been missing over the last few years. Adames occasionally, Yelich occasionally, and Contreras. But that's been it. Add another couple of bats to that is really quite exciting, and it probably presents a shift from being purely run prevention to actually, you know, slightly weaker pitching staff, but at the same time having that, it's a bit more exciting really. You know, you'd rather see yourself win a game 10-9 than 1-0. So I'm really looking forward to seeing that this year. But that's what I sort of predict. I do think there'll be a few players coming up over the year. I think Tyler Black is going to be intriguing. And I also want to keep a bit of an eye on Jake Bowers. He had something like a 48% hard hit rate or 48% barrel rate. I can't remember which one it was. In the second half of last season, just swinging for the fences, but like he was elevating the ball and he was crushing it. High strikeout though. So it's, can he blend that a little bit and become a little bit like, maybe a little bit like Roddy Tellez, but the good one, not the one we saw sort of more last year. So he's be interesting to see what they can get out of him. But no, he would be one I'm looking at. The other one, maybe, and I wasn't sold on him at the start of the offseason. I was actually thinking he's maybe prime for a trade. I would like to see if Garrett Mitchell can stay healthy, not just because of the stats on the page, but you find that when he's there, there's a little bit of electricity. Do you know what I mean? He can affect the game so many. His defense is incredible. Like, he just gasps for days. He has this sort of sneaky power just when he manages to get the ball in the air. But he's had a high strikeout rate when he's been in the big leagues. But got a little bit lucky BABIP wise as well. So be interesting to see if we can get a full season out of him. Just what that sort of looks like, and probably have a clearer picture towards the end. But lots of players battling it out for spots, and you know, you need that to compete these days. So yeah, really looking forward to seeing how that sort of all unfolds and how everybody getting excited and torn up over the opening day roster changes 2 days later when three players are injured and sent down to the minors and all of a sudden it doesn't matter anymore.
Exactly.
Yep.
So transitioning away from the Cubs lineup, the rotation, I think that's where we've seen the rotation in the bullpen. That's where we've seen the biggest change for the Brewers. Obviously, Corbin Burnes getting dealt to the Orioles for, you know, what seems like a pretty solid and interesting return. I do like the breaking ball shape of Hall. Yeah, like you had mentioned earlier, it's just whether or not he can kind of put that together in a longer set, like a longer outing as a starting pitcher. He was deployed at times in the bullpen for the Orioles last year. And then really, Brandon Woodruff was signed to a 2-year deal, but it's going to be about getting him healthy and seeing if the back end of that deal ends up being a good value for the Brewers. So that's not a component this year. So that ace of the rotation is probably Freddy Peralta. How does the rest of the rotation, and now with, as of yesterday, the Devin Williams injury, who's picking up saves? Who's picking up the end of the game for the Brewers this year?
Well, I think first off, I'd say, you know, really quite excited for Freddie. A couple of issues early last year, but he really dialed it in sort of July onwards. I think he won one of the Pitcher of the Month awards, but he was just electric. He was just striking people out front. Now, Freddie, there always seemed to be that one solo home run, like every time. Just solo home run. I'll strike out 10 guys, 5 innings. Oh, solo homer. Strike out another couple. Just always seemed to be the way, but really dialed in. So quite excited to see what that sort of looks like this year. Behind that, probably the next person we'd expect is Wade Miley. So Miley, of course, pitched for the Cubs a little bit. Ground ball merchant in some ways. His ground ball rate has actually dropped over the last few years, but he pitches situationally. If he needs a ground ball, he'll go cutter down and away. You know, he'll use his change up fantastically. You know, he just knows how to get what he wants. There is obviously an injury worry with him. If you get 100 innings out of him, you'll probably be quite happy. But he pitched brilliantly when he was with the Brewers last year. So if they can get 100 innings of that 3.5 ERA, they'll be delighted. After him, and this is where it starts to get shaky and sound very shaky, is Colin Ray, who was probably the 6th or 7th starter last year. Now, Ray was magnificent. I think he was the 3rd highest innings on the team. And was brilliant. He kept you in a game. But that's not really what you want from a number 3 starter. You want a little bit more. But look, he's made some tweaks. He's been working on, I think, a circle change. He said, look, he's always struggled with the change up, but it's Matt Trueblood wrote a brilliant piece on it, and he's feeling a lot more confident with it. So just as a way to sort of do some damage against lefties, which would be massive for him, not going to be anywhere near a Cy Young, but if you can, you know, get 120, 140 innings at sub-4 ERA, like even around a 4 ERA, you'd be happy. Very happy, actually ecstatic. Behind him, I think, is where it gets interesting. So I think DL Hall is pretty set up for that spot at this point. Baseball America graded my 80 grade fastball, 70 grade slider, 65 changeup, I think it was. Like, just electric stuff. And he made some big changes last season. He came back from a back injury, which is why he was mostly in the bullpen. And his velo sort of came back as the year went on. But no, he's the kind of guy who just, people just can't catch up to the fastball. It's not even just, it's a mixture of all sorts of things, from the angle to the vertical approach angle. He doesn't have electric sort of induced vertical break. VAA seems to have taken that over now, doesn't it? But he's just one of those pitches that just people just cannot seem to square up. And behind that, you know, the lefty angle, you know, he does get quite wide as well with the delivery. So really excited to see that and see, maybe not at the start of the season, but as the season progresses, does he start to hit that ceiling? Because, you know, at his best, he's an ace pitcher. But as we all know, that means you have to do it over a period of 180 innings. You can't just, you know, perform for 50 and then lose it. So that consistency is going to be the real battle for him. So behind him, there's a few people probably vying for it. I think Robert Gasser's probably in line for maybe the fifth spot, though he is optionable. So whether that happens, pitcher sits 92, 94 with the fastball. Cutter's probably better than the four seam. Really good slider. Another lefty, actually, which is filling up the rotation with him. But look, he's very good at he gets an inordinate number of strikeouts for, you know, the pitches that he has. He won the International Pitcher of the Year in AAA last year. He's nothing really left to prove. He's pitched there for, you know, injury-free, you know, incredible number of innings. So look, he's ready for this now. The question is, can his fastball avoid getting blown up? If it drops from the top of the zone, it can be trouble. And then behind him, you have Joe Ross, who I'm not fully sold on. He's on a very cheap contract, so if you did cut him for 1.25, it's not that big a deal. Though you could have just handed that to Craig Counsell and kept him, so maybe it's a bigger deal than I thought. And Jacob Junis, probably. Brewers obviously will usually go for six starters, so between him and Jacob Junis, who's, you know, very interesting, obviously, is that primarily slider guy, 60-65% sliders, really sets you up that way. His sinker can get hit, because he usually leaves it a little bit too much in the middle of the zone. If he can keep it down, he's grand. As soon as it hits up, though, it's been hammered. But that slider is one of the nastiest pitches you'll see. So even as a two-pitch guy, he should be able to do pretty well. And then the other one of them, I can sort of see being maybe a swing man along with Bryce Wilson in the rotation. Wilson was fantastic last year. Outperformed his expected numbers a bit, but did a really good job just coming in and quietly taking three innings away, you know, when a starter struggled. And then we get to, we're obviously missing Devin. Might as well get it out of the way. Big loss. Incredible closer, you know, regardless of, you know, who you'd prefer, he's one of the top three closers probably in the game. He's won pitch reliever of the year, I think, twice in the last 3 years. 4 years and a Rookie of the Year award. Like, that change up is incredible.
Yeah.
One thing where I've been very blessed with, though, with the Brewers is a sizable amount of depth. So I think there were four, maybe five pitchers with an ERA under three last year out of the bullpen. Hobie Milner was sub two. McGill was picked up off waivers from the New York Mets. He must be kicking themselves, because he has been he's been unbelievable. A fastball 100 plus, and the curveball has been wipeout. Then we have Abner Uribe, who we are probably expecting maybe take the reins after Devin left, whether that be, you know, per start of the season to trade him mid-season or the end of the year. You know, fortunately, that's the way it has to be in Milwaukee. But Uribe is just pure filth. He's just dirt. Absolutely dirty. That sinker is just lit up in pitching ninja. And I'm looking forward to seeing a bit more of that. But he's the big question mark about him is his mentality. Like, he's so intense. He has to win. But if things start going against him, there can be a little bit of immaturity there. So if a few things start to, you know, go against him, you might see the wildness creep in. And that will be the worry maybe this year, as well as pitchers maybe, or hitters maybe laying off him a bit. And then we have Yoel Piams, who's been, I mean, how you got him and alongside William Contreras in that trade, I have no idea how Matt Arnold pulled that off. But, I mean, if you're going to rob the Oakland A's, just go rob them. Like, no issue for that.
Yeah.
But yeah, soft contact guy. His four-seamer was pretty effective last year. The sinker got hammered, even though it was more used. But I'm guessing that's just pitch mix, and it sets up as the rest of the stuff better. Really nice slider. So real pitchability sort of guy. And does rack up enough Ks to keep himself going. And then an interesting name I can see maybe making the rotation. So we traded for Brian Hudson from the LA Dodgers. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to remember who we traded away for him. It was one of our top 30 prospects, I believe, and one of our recently signed pitchers from the most recent draft, from the 2023 draft, who people were actually a wee bit excited about. I think he might have been the 20th round, but the name escapes me. But Hudson is 6'8", 6'9", 8 feet of extension, which helps, and he's electric. again, 14, I think I mentioned earlier, 14 strikeouts per nine in the minor leagues last year. Came up and had a cup of coffee with the Dodgers at the end of last year, but no, he's a really exciting player. So he's performed well in spring training so far. Wouldn't be surprised to see him make the roster. Wouldn't be surprised to see them start him in AAA just because I think he has an option left. I could be wrong on that. No, I think he has one option left, and that was one of the big benefits, actually, because a lot of these guys are out of options. But if not, Elvis Baguero, who, again, performed really well last year, again, mid-3 ERA, is probably going to be that guy in the bullpen. So even without Devin, I can see it being a real strength for the Brewers this year, though you cannot replace Devin Williams, you know?
So the Brewers seem to always have this way with pitching. They bring in a guy, and, you know, he's just like you stated, you had how many pitchers had a sub-3 ERA last year. Is pitching a concern at all for you? I mean, everything you state, it sounds like it's a pretty positive, but one of the things that I see is after Freddie Peralta, it kind of drops down a little bit. Is that a concern at all for you?
Definitely in the starting rotation. I think there's a big onus on a couple of guys. So there are two guys that probably have the stuff to fill that number two and number three role, but both have considerable question marks. Aaron Ashby's just coming back from an injury, and he was probably pitching mid to high 80s when he came back last year. That ticked up the mid 90s or so in spring training, but look, he's a guy who could be filthy lefty. Brilliant sinker, slider. He used them completely unconventionally. He uses the slider into right-handers, which is strange, but hey, it works, does the job. And DL Hall, but you're relying on guys who have an unproven track record to take those steps. If Hall busts out or ends up having to be a reliever, or Ashby can't recover at all, and I think Ashby's going to start in the minor leagues, I think that's when. And, you know, let's face it, you know, people do not, you don't grow number two starters or ace starters in trees. Like, that just doesn't happen. You know, you can't be doing that. So more likely, are they going to be more like 3.5, 4.5 guys? Yes. And that's when you look at Miley, Ray, Junis, and you turn around and you say, well, look, let's get through these innings and stay in the game. But there's a real possibility. Like, I started in 2019 as a fan. Now, I have not seen a Brewers team without a dominant rotation, so I'm a little bit unsure how this all goes. But, you know, it's definitely a concern, and we are relying heavily on people taking that jump. And if it doesn't, then that offense is really going to have to tick up, and there are a few concerns over that as well. Potential, high potential, not a particularly high floor in a lot of ways, and I think that moves into rotation. The bullpen, zero questions really about it. I still think it's going to be a really dominant set of pitchers. And if you can get to that fifth, sixth inning in the game or ahead, I can still see it being lights out. I think there's going to be one of those committees probably for the ninth while Devin's out for the next 3 months or so. But Tyler McGill, Milner, Hudson, Payamps, Uribe, like they all have the stuff to do the role. So
sure.
I'm not too worried about it. Like you said, you cannot replace Devin Williams. And I would say, like, if I put Devin Williams in the Cubs right now, I would instantly put you guys as 90-win favorites because I think it was a weakness last year for yourself. No, that was just me watching. Remember, I probably watched one of the Brewers games, but then the bullpen seemed to be one of those things where struggled a little bit, which is why that Pythagorean didn't quite, you know, match up to the wins. I think it was expected 90 wins or something last year based on the number of runs you guys scored.
Yep.
There's some noise.
Is that a concern for yourselves?
Yeah, there was some noise in that data that Brett Taylor and I talked about in episode 3 of our pod. Check that out if you haven't heard it. There were some lopsided games for the Cubs that really just drove up that run differential. And then there was a lot, especially towards the end, like close losses. So the run differential was carried by some pretty ridiculous scores in some games. And the rest of the games were pedestrian. And as you said, there was, especially down the stretch, I think some guys got leaned on pretty heavy. And it was needed. It was needed to get back into the division. I know that there's a ton of criticism on Ross and how that was managed, but the Cubs were not over 500 heading into July and went on one hell of a run and were, you know, tap dancing the playoffs going into the trade deadline. They stood pat and kept rolling. And then, you know, they had some injuries and they had some guys like just right off the Leiter Jr.'s splitter disappeared, which made him ineffective. And that was the guy that was getting lefties out. And, you know, there wasn't a lot of interest in adding to the bullpen at the deadline because they felt that they had the guys they needed. They wanted to try some young guys out. The young guys did not pan out. They were not deployed in a way that I think made them effective, which could be a criticism of Ross. That would probably where I would land of he had a win now mentality where Craig Counsell, I felt as someone watching the Brewers, seemed to just really understand when to kind of lay off the gas when the game was out of control and not deploy like the A group, and then understood when a game was in control to deploy that and win the game and just manage that season, season to season, very well. And I think that's something the Cubs are going to be looking to balance, you know, some development of some of their younger pitchers and the back end of that bullpen, and, you know, finding guys that are solidified in some roles. And Craig Counsell, I think, is kind of the perfect guy to manage, you know, when these guys come in and kind of building their major league confidence so that you can use them in different situations if one of your top tier guys is gassed.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And you're right, that is a thing of his. He's very trusting in the players. You'd find that he's very much like he's good with management. He's a brilliant blend between that sort of high level management, he worked in the front office for the Brewers before actually becoming a manager. But as a player coming through, like he really has that experience of this guy's pushed a bit hard, this guy needs a break. And like if he's not pitching, I'm saying he's not pitching, I don't care. He could be in the ninth inning and you know, a couple of men on and nope, not deploying my closer. It's not happening. Day off. You know, such and such. I've got faith in you. I've put you in there. Go get him. Can be frustrating when you're like in the heat of the moment, but when you look back over the course of the season, it definitely pans out. And you do see probably less injuries, less fluctuations in form as a result. So you're 100% right. I can definitely see that being a big lift for the Cubs this year.
So I think we hit our next question was going to be strengths and weaknesses on the Brewers. And I think you said the weakness for you is that rotation, and the strength will still be the bullpen. So you mentioned seeing the back end of the bullpen or the bullpen in general being a weakness for the Cubs last year. As someone from the outside of Elliott, what do you see the strength of this year's Cubs team?
Well, there is one of the weaknesses of the Brewers that if they hit the ball in the air, this will be monstrous. If they don't, guys with incredible ability to pound the ball into William Contreras. Joey Ortiz pounds it into the ground. Christian Yelich pounds it into the ground. Like, you look at this and you're like, it's just double play galore. But other than that, yeah, happy enough. I think if I looked at the Cubs this year, I'd say there's, I think that infield D, just in general, even that D, especially if you get PCA up, you know, that late game sample last year isn't indicative of him as a player at all. You know, you need much larger sample size. And it's just
a little louder for the rest of the Cubs.
Yeah, can you say that again?
A little bit louder.
Yeah. Nico Armstrong is probably a good player. I think he's a good player, but everyone takes adjustment steps. You know, there's a massive jump from AAA to the majors. You see a lot. Take a look at Aaron Judge's. He got a cup of coffee for a couple of months with the Yankees before he took off. Have a look at those stats before you turn around and say, oh, peach crop. But I think Seiya Suzuki would be the one I'm most keen on. He seems to every year have a couple of months where he takes off with a one dot sort of OPS. And the question is health and form for him. You know, he seems to also then go through real down patches, but he's such a smooth swing, such an elegant swing. You know, I don't always sort of understand why there's the fluctuations. And then the big one will be, I think it revolves entirely around Shota Imanaga. And I did do a little bit of a thing in this. So There's a lot of debate. Is this guy a number two starter? Is he? And then there were some execs being like, oh, he's like number four or five. Like, we're not that keen on him. And I was like, okay. So obviously once someone signs, and I'm, by the way, I'm completely guilty of this as well. See, when someone signs to the Brewers, I was like, Theo Holt, now we want him to trade. Then he signed. I was like, oh, I really like this guy. So once you delve into them. But so I had a look at this guy, and he compared to a pitcher that I quite liked. So this guy had more swings and misses than anyone else in the middle of the strike zone, like middle. Don't know why, just went past them. Just great ride in that fastball. But he gave up the second most home runs that year. He pitched 158 and two-thirds innings at a 3.69 ERA. Do you think that would be reasonable as an expectation for Shota in the year?
I am more optimistic, and that's one of my taglines, optimistic Cubs fan. I'm more optimistic on Shota Imanaga than most. I think he does have a ceiling of a two or three starter with a floor of a five. I don't, you know, a lot of people were stating that his ceiling was a four or five starter with a floor of a middle reliever. I saw scattering reports out there like that, and I just, that doesn't seem right. And then I think the spring, small sample size alert, he's kind of proven why he gets hit hard for home runs. He lives in that strike zone. I mean, to even watching those spring games, he lives in the strike zone. He doesn't walk batters. The issue is because of how short he is, his arm angle's great to go against that, being 5'9", I think he is, but he can't get that rise on his fastball, which when that gets left middle, it's going to get hit hard. However, a couple of more recent starts, we're starting to see him use the top part of the strike zone and also outside of it by design, and he's getting a lot of swings and misses on that. I think going back to the question, is he that 3.69 ERA pitcher? Yeah, I think he is. I think by the end of the year, he's going to have that sub four ERA. Again, I'm a little more optimistic, but I'm also a big fan, and he'll be my next jersey that I pick up. So,
you know, I think if we ever make merch for our podcast, the first thing that it'll say is small sample size alert. I feel like that is our most buzzworthy comment as far. But just to kind of piggyback on the Shota, yeah, I think the projections have been all over the board for exactly what, you know, what you said is that fastball was in the zone and got hit and elevated a lot last year. And he had made some comments about like just being too fastball heavy when his last season and using that to throw as many strikes as possible, that he felt that he became predictable and that's where the home runs had come from. And the Cubs have worked, you know, diligently with him on, you know, pitch mix. And so far this spring, once again, small sample size alert, he struck out 19 of 41 batters. So that's a 46% strikeout rate. That'll play. It's not going to stay that high. But we're talking about a rotation, you know, if we're going to talk about weaknesses for the Cubs, a rotation that does not have a lot of swing and miss. You know, there's a lot of contact management that plays into the strength of that strong middle infield, a strong defense up the middle. The old baseball adage of a great defender in center field and a great shortstop, second base defense, and then a great catcher. Strong up the middle is supposed to be what makes a baseball team click defensively. And, you know, I think the Cubs have that, but you know, it does. Looking for swing and miss is probably the title of Jed Hoyer's in-season autobiography. Like we need to find some swing and miss for this rotation to kind of just change up the type of pitcher they're getting, and they need to find some additional swing and miss for this bullpen, which I think is coming. You know, there's Cade Horton lying in the weeds. You know, I think he's going to start at AAA, and he was a quasi-shocker of a pick given his numbers at Oklahoma when the Cubs picked him, but they saw the upside. They saw what he did in the College World Series that year and saw stuff to work with, and he's one of the top prospects in baseball, not just the top prospects in the Cubs system, and I think he's going to get some run at some point, and he's going to have that strikeout stuff that the Cubs are looking for. And yeah, I think there is also, you know, with Jameson Taillon having the lower back issue, I don't think they said that it's going to – they're not sure of how many starts he's going to miss, what the setback's going to be. It doesn't – still kind of up in the air. But, yeah, it's a very lefty-heavy rotation too. That's something that, you know, I'm concerned about. And, you know, like, I don't think you want to slot Imanaga and Justin Steele. I know they have – the discussion is always around the Mississippi fastball and its uniqueness for Justin Steele as it goes towards the plate. It just – travels a little differently than other pitches, which is why it's so hard to square up. And kind of that funky arm angle of Imanaga, I don't know if that's enough of a difference. I feel like they have like a similar profile with a little more swing and miss from Imanaga. Maybe we see a little more swing and miss from Justin Steele as he kind of finds another out. He was really dominant versus the Brewers the other night, obviously in spring training, and obviously in these guys are starting to sort of ramp up and not a lineups necessarily for both teams. So there's a lot of caveats there, but he did saw, you know, kind of an uptick in strikeouts, which was good to see for a rotation that's gonna need some more swing and miss. Yeah, and that's so
do you have any concerns that Justin's gonna like regress a little bit this year? Like obviously incredible surface stats last year, like really backed it up. I know Matt, for instance, is convinced that it's not a fastball, it's a cutter. But either way, truly electric pitch, and people just can't seem to get any sort of quality contact against it. But is there any sort of worry that over, you know, a new year, really generally you find some sort of fluctuation that there might be some regression? Because I know, I think it was Fangraph actually projected Imanaga to have 3 WAR and him to have 2.7, which is like blew my mind a wee bit, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, I think that's a tough one because I think that there's going to be a natural regression because he was quite dominant last year, but I also see, you know, him maintaining that level at minimum because I think he really just really was gassed. It was his first full major league season, first time over 150 innings in a number of seasons. He was at 173 innings last year. I think that, you know, he's going to learn to manage his, you know, his effort and things like that, things that younger pitchers, especially as they get in rotation, will have to learn. And, you know, he's had some other pitches in the past that he really bailed on. Like last year, he was pretty much a two-pitch pitcher. He had a sinker in there sometimes. He has been known to throw in the past a curveball and a changeup, but I think he just kind of manipulates that slider and speed and a little bit of grip, and then the fastball is just two pitches. So the question will be, and I think that's what probably Fangraph sees, is some of the noise at the end of the season, was that tiredness, or is that the league adjusting to, you know, what they're seeing from him? And I think there's definitely some concern on a two pitch feature pitcher, but that fastball is so unique. It's hard to really sit there and think that, you know, like that is not enough, given that it was enough for as long as it was. And, you know, I feel like the league would have adjusted quicker, but you never know. Like a whole off season of scouting reports could change that dramatically. And, you know, that could spell a little bit of trouble for the Cubs, but Justin Steele just seems to have, he has been mentored by John Lester. He just seems to have like that guy feeling, like this is the win day mentality. Like when Justin Steele's on the mound, I would expect 75-80% of the time him to pitch well enough to get the win.
Yep.
He's a horse. No, I wouldn't disagree with that. He's been in trouble certainly last year. So much just poor contact. Like he just ground ball, weak fly. And it you'd almost rather he struck you out, to be honest. It's slightly less frustrating than the hope of when you're watching on TV and you see that, like, go, through.
And especially when you're watching a Cubs versus Brewers game where every fly ball sounds like a homer because of the crowd in the background.
Every time.
You know,
every time.
Every time.
It's just like all I need is like I have to tune the crowd out. I let you just listen to commentators,
right?
Or you need Euchre or something, just being like, get up. I'm like, okay, we're gonna get excited now.
Yeah, we can get excited now.
I would have had such a hard time listening to Bob Uecker just because like 70% of my baseball youth was rewatching Major League. And he's just
a bit outside.
Yeah, clearly not a clearly not a serious baseball announcer in those movies, and thinking that like he does this professionally in a much more literal, not joking way. I don't know if I could transfer like where my brain starts. Yeah, that would be very challenging for me. But one last, I think, question we have been going through with each team and looking at some of the win-loss projections at different betting sites. No free ads. We do not mention the betting sites that we looked at because we don't have ads with you. So if you'd like us to mention, give Sean or myself a call, email, tweet, something, and we will mention your site on this podcast. But the win-loss projection for the Brewers shifted pretty dramatically after the Corbin Burns trade. And I will also caveat that the win-loss projection for the Brewers has been around this number, I feel like, every year during the council era, and it didn't matter. So right now they have the number at 76.5. We'll start with you, Jake, and we'll move to Sean and then myself. Would you say over or under for the Brewers this season?
So when I look at like things like this, even in most sporting context, when it's one game, I'd say like 70% of the time or 80% of the time, this was going to happen. Like, there's probably a 20% chance the floor falls out of this. They're like in that rotation, just falls out the bottom, and they end up 65 to 70 wins. There is a chance of that, but I would say there's probably a 40, 50% chance you end up 500, and probably another 20% chance or so that you end up above that. 20-30% where you're in the playoffs and you still got that good coaching staff there, you've got some rookies that could take off. I'd probably hammer the over. Now, I wouldn't bet my house, but yeah, if I had to bet for my life, I would absolutely smash that over and run away. What about yourselves? What do you think? 76.5, did you say?
Yeah. 76.5.
That's low for a team that, 92, which do you think they've lost, right? 15 wins on last year, 16 wins?
Well, so, Fangraphs has Corbin Burns himself, a 4.4 WAR player, and he's gone. And then just thinking of losing Woodruff, you know, obviously at times not his full self, health an issue, but still a huge part of that rotation. And, you know, I think
he only pitched 60 innings last year now. He got 2.7 WAR, but like 2.4, but 60 innings. So big part of it. But
6.8 off that projection in theory. So like we're talking the difference between 77 and 84. That's I think that's fair, but it's tough because I like last year they probably had the Brewers. I would be interested to look at the bid. I would say they were probably at a 78 win projection. They won a division with 92 wins. So I just don't take a lot of, and you know, a podcast that doesn't exist that was near and dear to my heart, On to Waveland over at The Athletic. Listen to the old episodes, Sahada Sharma and Patrick Mooney, and now friend of the pod, Brett Taylor over at Bleacher Nation. They every year would do the preseason analysis, and it became a joke of they would have kind of a similar conversation, and they'd be like, I want to say this is the year that number is either right on or under for the Brewers, but they have proven us wrong again and again. And then the next season would come and it'd be the exact same conversation. It's just really difficult to make that pick.
Yeah, Jake, I feel this is probably where you're going to be really disappointed in me, but I'm going to take the under on it. And I know, I hope this isn't my suspicion talking, but I really hope by taking the under, you guys don't show up and do 92 wins this year, because I feel like that's my luck when I do any kind of picks. But here's a couple of reasons why I'm taking the under. I think the loss of Devin Williams is going to be significant in the trade of Corbin Burns. Yeah. The starting, and we kind of touched on this already, the starting pitching staff, I don't think it's going to do the Brewers any favors. When you have to lean on that youth, I think that makes things really difficult. But again, youth can also provide huge upside. So Yeah, it's kind of a push and shove. The roster itself, especially on the offensive side, is young and without a lot of – I mean, you have Hoskins. You have, you know, Yelich, Adamas as pretty good anchors, veterans, leaders there. But I feel like this team's going to have a lot of peaks and valleys. Where it peaks and where it valleys, I think, is going to be a huge deciding factor for this team, because looking at your roster construction, and I found this really fascinating. It's almost like trying to hit a small hole with a very, very small target. It's going to be, you have players on the roster like a Hoskins, Junis, Sanchez, Miley, Ross, Adamas, who are all either free agents after the season or the following season. That tells me that you're like, okay, if we can just get into the wild card hunt, maybe you add at the trade deadline. But this seems like a team that if you're not hitting on all cylinders and near that trade deadline, it's going to be a sell-off. And I think it's more likely that you do a sell-off than an add at the deadline. And that's one of the reasons why that the second half, I just don't think you're going to get up to that 76, 77 win mark.
No, I think that's fair. I think in general, the way I'd have looked at it is that I'd have said, you know, if you give me a 500 sort of thing, I don't think they're going to end up at 500. I think they're either going to be 9 games over it or 9 plus games under it. I don't think there's middle ground for that exact reason. Like, it either depends. The rookies take off and things are great. Rookies didn't go that well last year, despite the big freshman thing. One thing I would say is it does seem like a lot of the expectation coming into this year was that 2024 was going to be a slight reset year. In a lot of ways, you know, Churio gets blooded. I don't think we're going to see the best of him this year. Maybe towards the end, I think there's a bit of development still to go there. But you know, you have so much talent coming through and high ceiling talent, I think, which is a real game breaker. You know, if you had DL Hall settled in the rotation and Mizorowski actually able to find the strike zone, he gets swings and misses even when he doesn't. So screw it, doesn't matter. But you know, Robert Gasser coming through, who's shown success. You've got Freddie Brault and Brandon Woodruff for next year. So there's still that potential to sell off and retool and be highly competitive in 25. So 24 really will be that one way or the other way. And I completely agree with you on that front. And if the early season doesn't go well, like Adamas, the Dodgers trade is probably going to go haywire, given Gavin Lux couldn't hit a barn door 10 miles wide, it seems, with a throw. So like, he actually would, not because he couldn't hit it, he wouldn't actually reach the barn door. But yeah, other than that, I actually get that. And I can't see that happening. And I think either way will be a win going into 25 playoff team, always great. If not, and you're set up for 2025, great, because I think the tools are there for both. And it depends which way they go. As long as they don't end up half and halving it, sort of half in, half out, I think that's where the danger sort of comes for maybe the future of the franchise in its sort of real window of competitiveness. But I can definitely see them coming under. Like, I don't think there's any real doubt about that.
Yeah, I think, you know, I agree with a lot of what Sean had said. And, you know, I tend to evaluate these things as, you know, we've done the Pirates and we've done the Reds. And the Pirates and the Reds were surprising to me at like 82.5 was their that was a shocker. But you know, I think they have a lot of youth on that team, and the upside is hard to figure out. And that rotation did get deeper, and you know, they do have, if Lodolo's healthy, you know, you got Hunter Green. And listen to the Reds episode, everyone. You can hear me say all these things. But, and then, you know, I took the over on them, a slight over on them, just because I feel that the thing that fell apart with them always is their bullpen and the rotation depth. And they did address that this offseason.
Yep.
And the Pirates, I took the over. I believe they were around 77. And that was, you know, ultimately the reason I did that was how the rosters for both those teams are constructed, similar to what Sean has said, there isn't really sell-off potential for those players. There's no, you know, there's no like guy that I would circle on the Pirates or the Reds that is going to get traded at the trade deadline. So it just feels like they're going to stand pat, which would kind of put them in more games than, you know, that than they theoretically should be, where kind of what you said with the Brewers, this feels like a transition year and not necessarily in a negative way. They've got a lot of young talent, like a lot of arbitration controlled young talent that is going to be part of like that next wave. And it's going to come down to like some difficult decisions, maybe at the deadline with like a Freddie Peralta, see if someone will overpay for his last few years of control. Willie Adamas obviously coming off the books, and, you know, whether or not the Dodgers will, you know, end up making that trade, you know, sooner rather than later. I don't know. I don't know if the Brewers see what happened with Devin Williams as a sign to potentially open that door again, as, you know, the Dodgers might overpay, or if the Dodgers are really going to run with Mookie Betts at short. And that makes kind of that picture challenging. But I also feel like the number for the Brewers is kind of spot on. So I want to say like a slide over. I see them as like a 77 win team, 78 win team, kind of hovering that 500 mark. I don't know if losing Adamas is one of those things that, you know, kind of has them tank away. And I think the rotation has a lot of talent, and they have deployed pitching in such a strong way. I think that there's been a lot of talk of like how deep this bullpen is, and I actually I'm pretty high on Aaron Ashby. I thought when he came up, he was just an incredible player, and they deployed him really well in that bullpen, kind of similar to how they got Woodruff and Peralta started, with just introducing them to the major leagues that way, and, you know, getting their feet wet. So I think the number is very appropriate, and I've said this to Sean, and I've said this, you know, to lots of other folks, that this is an extremely tight division. Nobody ran away with it, just like we said at the top. And there is just going to be a lot of challenge ultimately in trying to figure out, you know, who gets hot when. And, you know, in that regard, once they do get hot, like what, when do they get hot? Because that is going to be such a component to what they do at the trade deadline. And that's going to be what shifts this, you know, over under conversation significantly, because this is like a division that can be won by a well-timed 15-2 stretch. And yep. if that happens in June and you're adding, I think the Cubs might be in the best position to add to their roster, because
what?
They okay. have the most locked up by contract and established major league players at positions, that they would have the most depth in the minors to deal from. Where I'm looking at like the Pirates, who are young and are still addressing that rotation and have some very important prospects still kind of coming up. I look at the Reds, who their young players are there, so they need seasoning. I'm not sure they're going to bail on that project, you know, right away with how that team's going. Mm-hmm. And I would say the Cardinals roster is constructed in a way that it's just kind of a hodgepodge of good hitters, and they have two cornerstones to that offense with Paul Goldschmidt, Nolan Arenado, that are aging and high dollar contracts. And I think the trades need to happen from that major league roster, because I don't think they have the same type of minor league depth as the other teams in this division right now. And I just don't see the Brewers moving any of that depth as they transition to the next good version of a Brewers team, which, like, I think is right there at 2025. I think we're having a completely different conversation. And
for sure,
I think the least setup for a transition is probably the Cardinals. And the Cubs have, you know, Owen Casey. They have some depth at the outfield that, if they're really going to commit based on the contract length to, say, a Suzuki and Ian Happ, these guys don't have places to play. So they can be their top 100 or fringe top 100 prospects that can be put in a deal to address the rotation, or they can be put in a deal to address the bullpen. And that puts them in a unique position. The frustrating part is they didn't do that prior to the season. It feels like they're waiting. And so we're having a completely different conversation of the Cubs being like within 2 to 3 wins of this entire division. And like, this is going, it's literally going to be who stays healthy till June, whose record looks the best at June, and who's the first to add, because that is how close this division is. And yeah, if D.L. Hall comes in that rotation and pitches as nasty as I think he could, and Aaron Ashby comes and contributes like I think he could, and Freddie Peralta just maintains what he is, that's a 1-2-3 and depth of the Brewers that, you know, makes me very nervous, because that's a high K rate right there. That's some funky arm angles. And yeah, I think their offense is a little better than years past. But, you know, that's in the same situation for the Cubs. Yeah, it's just, if, you know, like Sal Frelick, is he their very solid defensive outfielder, or is he playing third base? Like, that's, there's a lot of things that they're still sorting out with the Brewers that I think the Cubs have, like, similar to what we talked, there's no position battles for the Cubs this year. There's like, we invited everyone and their mom to battle for one bench spot. Like, it's just like, I guess like that's why I feel like the Cubs floor is potentially higher than some of the teams, and they have the ability to add, but I think the ceiling on some of the teams in this division is potentially higher than what the Cubs have at the moment because of the youth and the lottery ticket mentality of some of these prospects. So that's why I'm so hesitant in my predictions for this division. It's like, if O'Neill Cruz takes a step and carries that Pirates team, and, you know, Paul Skeens comes up and some of the other arms they have, they like really solidify their rotation. That's terrifying. If the Reds hit and run like they did last year and get solid rotation pitching, and that bullpen is a little deeper, that's terrifying. Like, that's a very good offense than a ballpark that loves offense. And yeah, I mean, if all of the AARP card holding members of the Cardinals rotation pitch like they're young again, then like, that's terrifying.
But, so, but they won't.
Not gonna
lie. You lost Jordan Montgomery. Like, exactly. We're forgetting this part of it as well. Like,
We signed Lance Lynn, who was a Cardinal and was good like 8 years ago.
I think I saw someone posting something like when they handed Brandon Crawford a deal, and they're like, "Jeepers, this Cardinals team would have been great in 2015."
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah, they look like, really good.
They are like
so
20.
Good.
They're currently the 2014 even year Magic Giants. Like, that's but that was 9 years ago, 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
oops.
True.
But yeah, thanks so much, Jake, for coming on and, you know, managing how late it is now over there and entertaining us with some Brewers talk. If our listeners are looking for your content, where can they find you on social media? And just give us a little spiel about what you write for Brewers Fanatic.
So I'm at the Brewers Blogs on Twitter, and yeah, in Brewer Fanatic, I'm a bit of a nerd, so one of my favorite things is I like diving into sort of statistical anomalies, what's going on behind, who works well with who, and I always like to find reasons, you know, if someone's struggling, why, what's going on, what's changed, what's different here, sample sizes, sorry, small sample size alert, are always important, but I think that's where a lot of sort of my analysis would really come from, where the potential is, where the balances are. I like to find sort of a unique perspective on things. You know, if you find something that's, you know, I don't really like to write clickbait stuff. I write stuff that I would find interesting to learn and hope other people do as well. I'm sure it's the same in Northside Baseball, you know, a lot of spring training stuff. What things are going to look like into the year, where the X factors are, pieces like that. So it's all really exciting time, certainly in the Diamond Centric group. And absolutely loving it. It's been a pleasure, by the way, guys. So thank you very much for having me.
Thanks so much.
This has been great crack.
We'll have to have you back, as you know, some of the bigger Brewer Cub series come to be this year. I think it would be great to kind of do a series preview as we look at some of the key matchups, especially if both teams are competitive, which I think early on, all these teams are just going to be right in it. So it's definitely going to be value to bring you back on and get your perspective on who's hot, who's not. And we can give you, you know, the lowdown on what the Cubs are running up in the rotation and the matchups for those series. But John, before we go, where can people find you on social media?
Not on my secret Instagram anymore.
Oh, no.
Only fans?
No, so
only dads.
Yeah, only dads. So you can find me on Facebook and Twitter at Hot Stove Cubbies. And also, I'll be writing my first piece at Northside Baseball, so that's really exciting. Hooray, thank you.
Welcome to the fam.
Yeah.
And you can find me, as always, as Candid Cubs on almost all social media programs. All social media programs on all social media networks. You can find me on X as Candid Cubs. You can find me on Instagram as Candid Cubs. You can find me on Facebook as Candid Cubs. You can find me in my own house as Candid Cubs. And you can find us on our new Reddit community for Bricks Behind the Ivy, which will have all the information on the latest episodes, some behind the scenes, and some of the TikToks that I sadly produce for 200 of you to see. But once again, this has been another episode of Bricks Behind the Ivy. Thanks so much, and we will see you guys next time.
Holy cow!